Okay, it's the 28th of June 2007, and this is Matthew Richardson from the Manx Museum talking to Mr. Crompton about his time as a marshal at the TT. Okay, Mr. Crompton, can you tell me how you first of all, are you from the Isle of Man?
Yes.
You are. So what were your first memories of the TT? Presumably as a...
First memories of the TT is when I came back as a boy. But I went into the Royal Navy and I came out in 1946. And my first memories is getting excited to go and see the races.
Right.
I would be 22, 23 years of age then.
Hmm.
And I volunteered to go and I did the 49 one. And then I've kept it going ever since. And that was for the TT and the Grand Prix.
Right. So tell me about that first one, that first 1949 one. How did you come to get involved?
It was absolutely fantastic.
Yes.
Your blood started to boil, and you saw these riders who were displaying their talents on machines.
Yes.
But when you look at the machines today, you wonder how they ever got round.
Yes.
But they did it, and there was an excitement, and there was a comradeship between the marshals. There was a comrade spirit between the riders, where a rider, I've actually seen him, would come down Bray Hill, where I've marshalled all the time, and he would conk out at the bottom, and his next fella behind me would say, "What's the matter?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I think I've got a bad spark plug." He said, "Well, borrow my spark, my plug spanner," and he would take it out from his boot that he had those days, and there was a comradeship that he would help him to get his bike going, and then they were both set up and they're racing against each other, and he'd stop to help him. And the plans that came to the TT, some of the photographs, if you look in Hemmersley's shop window, you'll see them lined all the way around the course. Not one or two deep, but 6, 8 and 10 deep from Cregner Bar right down to Windy Corner. And there was a spirit amongst people. No nastiness, we didn't see any trouble, but the comradeship was there. It was a TT, tourist trophy, and it was beautiful. And then, of course, I started work in the Villa Marina, where I worked for 58 years, and it was a great excitement to go to the Monday, Wednesday and Friday presentations. Monday was the junior. Wednesday was the... what's the name of it? Senior day was Friday, and it used to be the...
Lightweight, was it? Or?
No. Like a production. There is a name for it. It's when Jeff Duke rode it first. And he'll have to forgive me because some of my memory now is going with age. And it used to be the Mayor of Douglas on Monday night. On Wednesday night, it would be the High Deemster. And on Friday night, it would be the Governor that made the presentation. And behind the scenes on the stage, which we'd set up, and all the trophies was put on there for each race. They also got the printed records of every rider's time from the winner down to the last man, telling his overall time, his fastest lap time, what he received as a prize, and what trophy he got. And I've still got them from way back. And if you'd like to see them, I can certainly let you see them, in, providing you let me have them back.
Of course.
And... well, all I can say was so exciting. There was things that went with the TT. Wasn't just racing; it was the atmosphere. It was everything about the island, where we did things like we had all those boats running them days. The boats were coming in for the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at all different times all through the night. So rather than disappoint the fans that had no accommodation, the Douglas Corporation, in the wisdom, used to get all the men from the villa, the heavy gangers, we called it them, from the corporation, and we would take in to the Villa Marina all the deck chairs that was out in the gardens. Mm. So you would have, say, what, say 8,000 deck chairs available, and we put them all over the ballroom floor and in the various corridors, and when the boats came in, they could come up to the Villa Marina, go in at any time of the night, after the last show, like Joe Loss, anything like that, and they could go and sit or have a sleep in the deck chair. And then, of course, Miss Madrill had the cafe, so they could get a hot breakfast. And when they came to and they wanted to go and see the raid, you'd had all the coaches outside, Craig Nabar, Windy Corner, the mountain section, anything like that, you could go, and it was fabulous. The spirit was there. And we enjoyed it. And them days we used to have whistles. And if there was an accident,
yes,
blow the whistle so that the gentleman further up understood what he was talking about or tried to convey. And you used to do a lot of the messages on foot. And then, of course, the Boy Scouts was on the grandstand and they altered all the signboards and everything. It was absolutely fabulous. I've loved every minute of TTs.
How did you manage to fit in the marshalling when you were quite clearly busy at the Villa with all the presentations?
Well, how I managed to do that, I used to arrange it so I could have my days off on practice or race days, or I would take practice week as a holiday.
Right.
So I could do the morning and evening practice.
Yeah.
And I'd get up at 4 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock and amble down. I always wanted to be early, so we got like the stretch of the fire appliances and the Red Cross boxes out. And we knew then that if they were out, we were all right. All we had to do was put the barriers up, or the ropes up, and see that the course was clear, and see that nobody strayed out onto it. In all the time I've been marshalling, your warrant card where you made a special constable, I have never used it once. I found that if you spoke to the people who had come to see the races in a proper manner without being officious, they would take notice of it. But if you went throwing your weight about, says, I am a marshal, they'd put the back up. But we had so many tales to tell down there, till this present day now, this TT just gone, I unofficially marshal because I'm too old, because they can't get you insured after 75. So therefore, I'm not telling you how old I am now. And we have people coming from Italy, Jacko Magostini's crowd, and they come down to the bottom of Bray to see me. And one gentleman whose father in Italy has his own vineyard, they're so keen on the TTs and the spirit and the lovely atmosphere that the Manx people give out to the lot to the people that come across. He always brings me a case of his own wine. They presented me with an Italian flag, which I can show you, a silk flag. And I've got Giacomo Agostini's autographs and all the big shots of racing. And I've seen so many riders. When you go back, like Artie Bell, Jock West, Freddie Frith, Lorenzetti, you could go on forever.
Can you tell me any stories about any of the famous riders that you've met?
All the famous riders. I'll give you an instance where Joy Dunlop, in recent years, he was coming down Bray Hill and he conked out in his practice. And I went to him and said, are you going to always find out if they're going to proceed, or do they want somebody come and pick them up, or can they get back up to the grandstand? He said, no, I can't proceed. I'm going back up to the grandstand with the bike. He said, so if you can, I'll move the barrier for you. So I moved the barrier, but he's turning the lock on his handlebars to come round. He run over my right foot. So I said, Joy, do you know you've just run over my big toe? He said, well, don't worry about it. You've got one on the other foot. Some of the stories I would like to tell you, but I don't want to, really, are a little bit gruesome, and I don't like going into gruesome things. All I can say to you is what a very, very sad day it was when Les Graham got killed, when you saw Count Augusta coming down Bray Hill dressed in a lovely suit, and it was wet through with tears, because Les Graham was one of the finest riders on the course at that time, and it was so sad to see what happened to him. And that was caused, not nastily, but it was caused by a gentleman being on a Norton, a Mr. Brown, had gone into the correct racing line between the manhole cover and the curb, and Les is behind him going like a bat out of hell, and he had to go off his racing line, to which he hit the palings of the left-hand side, and he went into a speed wobble. And that's how he came to crash into the sub bank further up. But like I say, as a marshal, you don't go on about accidents. The same as when people come down, silly boys that come off the boat, and they come to you and say, does anybody come off here? And with that, we just reply, no. What we do here is see that the riders are very good on the riding skills, they've got the correct lines, and we don't want anybody coming off. So we'd advise you people to move away from this spot, which they do. But as regards, I've seen so many accidents, and what we do normally, and I've done, where I've got letters of praise, and I've got my certificate up there, you can see it, 50 years, is that if a rider comes off and he's in Noble's Hospital, we go along at the night time to see either his wife or his sweetheart or his mother and father, and see if there's anything we can do to help them as regards finance or accommodation or travel arrangements. We've done that for years with the Marshals Association. And every marshal on that course, I'll take my hat off to him, he goes out in all weathers and he does his job thoroughly, and he's a good marshal. Will respect the crowd, and the crowd will respect the marshal. As regards what you're saying, can I relate any stories? There's stories, you can go through hundreds of them. Jock West, the other gentleman that pushed his Porcupine from Governor's Bridge to the grandstand when the race was stopped through about inclement weather, when Jeff Duke and Reg Armstrong pulled in, and Rayan went and got the tic-tac, and he went straight through on the last lap and won it. And Jeff was absolutely devastated with that one, because I spoke to him afterwards. He couldn't believe it, that they'd let it go for another lap when they just cancelled it. There's things like that. We can take another gentleman coming down, and he stopped right opposite me, and I said, what's the problem? He said, I don't know. I said, well, have you switched your petrol cap, your tap over, so you've got juice flow? Oh, you're quite right. Flicked it over and off he went. The stupid things like that. Another one of the biggest jokes is, not riders, but the crowd. The crowd is one of the most important things. They come to see good riding. And the genuine Manx person looks after them very well. And they come along and they'll say to you, how many people are on the island with the racers? I said, well, I've not counted them yet, but what I do is look out in the bay, Douglas Bay, and you see by the Tower of Refuge a wooden pole that's in the sea going into the ground below the sea. Now, if that water is up by the red mark and it's marked up in red and white square, you'll know there's roughly about 27,000-28,000 visitors on the island with the machines. But you can tell it also when you measure that stick that the island's gone down 3 inches in the water. And most people say, does it actually do that? So you get a little camaraderie going, a little laugh. And this year, this last TT, as normal, every TT and run, we take the bucket up and we entertain the crowd that's there, saying, if you've any of our Mickey Mouse money in your pockets and you're going back this evening or tomorrow evening, if you want to get rid of it in a nice way, if you put it in this bucket, that goes to help the helicopter fund or the injured riders. And when I say this to you, I'm not speaking to you from me. I'm speaking to you on behalf, on behalf of all the riders. They thank you very much, and your generosity is more than welcome. So I did it this year, and I think we collected roughly about £300-400 on that one. So we've always done that, and anything I can do to help them, and I've said that when I go, I don't want to be morbid, but all my paraphernalia that I've got and memorabilia goes to either the Manx Museum or something like that, because I've got loads of it, and I'm glad to give it to you.
You mentioned a minute or two ago about the equipment that you had when you first started marching, that the stretcher and the first aid. But could you tell me a little bit more about the flags? Could you just run
yes,
through
that? Yes, we had all the flags, the different positions. The sun was there, it raining. With all them, everything was near enough the same. But it's more modernised now. We've got these walkie-talkie telephones, and that a lot of it was done by hand and mouth. Mm. But the equipment was more or less, it's not changed all that much.
No.
The stretcher's still there, like. The only thing is that the stretcher in those days when I first saw, was a canvas one on two poles. Well, now we've got the metal one, which is a good one. Your fire equipment was rather hazy them days, but now we're up to scratch. And we used to assemble at the bottom of Bray Hill. And before any practice or any race, the sector marshal, which I was one of them, used to line the men up, and I would say, right, so we all know what we're doing. Let's get it organised properly, so not on the last minute. You two, one and two, the first priority is to see to the rider. If he comes off his bike and it's priority, you can buy a machine, but you can't buy a life. So you and you fully trained in first aid, you see to the rider. Three and four, you get the machine off the track, off the road, and in a safe position. Five and six, you see that there's no debris on the road, so another rider coming down doesn't crash into any debris. And the last two of the gang, you look for crowd control, because the public, when they see a crash, they get excited and might want to go in the roadway. You must keep them off, because there could be a rider coming down, there could be a travelling marshal coming down. Now, going on to funny stories, I hope I'm forgiven for these, but we had a little laugh in our way when the marshals were presented with the new bikes, the Honda bikes, lovely machines. And I won't mention his name, but he went to fill up his tank and he filled it full of diesel. So that machine had to go back, and he got another brand new one. And then we had our dear friend, Kipper. I'm saying no more, but everybody will know who Kipper is in the motorcycle world, that came down on his first lap on a bike and dropped it at Quarterbridge. And that was a brand new Honda. There's various things like that, and they stop and they come and have it, the travelling marshal come and stop, everything all right, but that's the excitement of TT. Mm-hmm. And the Grand Prix is wonderful as well. I've enjoyed every Grand Prix. And I don't know what most, all I can say, the camaraderie, it was wonderful, the bikes. I can remember the first year that the Japanese came, and the police had to go up and get rid of some of the children up at the grandstand, because the Japanese teams, they were giving away radios and wristlet watches and pens, and they were getting mobbed with all these children after them. And then the customs people stepped in and stopped all that. I remember the days when they got the petrol free. They got the tyres free. They got the oil free, providing they would say, I rode on Dunlop tyres if he comes in the first day six. They used to take over the, it was by Grenzel's Corner. It was a private hotel, and Dunlop used to take it over for the fortnight, and they would take the bay window out, and that was their set to balance the wheels and put tyres on. And all they had to do was take them there, they would get the tyres free, they got the chain, but they had to say, I rode on Schlesinger gloves, with the wore Schlesinger gloves. But everything was free in them days. These days, and I've been to Marshall's meetings, and I've got a bad name myself for being a bit obstinate, in that I thought it was about time the Manx government woke up to TT Week and Grand Prix Week and said, right, if we are going to have a successful TT or a Grand Prix, then we should do more for the rider, especially the boys on the canvas in Shantytown. Not improve the conditions there, example, baths, showers, toilets, because they're entertaining literally thousands of people. But my eye horse was the government should turn round to the steam packet company and say, right, we shall pay for every rider and machine, a competitor, and one mechanic to come to the island free of charge. Because they have it costs them a fortune to ride here now. They've got to take time off work. And the lower down the field, they're in Shantytown, they're in camber, under canvas, it could be wet weather all the time. Mm-hmm. So why don't we, as a loving nation like the Isle of Man is, and an excellent government that we've got, that can spend out literally millions on other things, but the big attraction, and it is the biggest attraction of the whole calendar year, is the TT. So why don't we help these boys with the machine?
Absolutely, yeah. Can you remember Bob McIntyre breaking 100 mile an hour?
I do.
Can you tell me anything about that?
Well, it came through to us, he broke it, but it came through to us first that Jeff had done it. And I still think Jeff did it.
This was the year or two before, wasn't it? When he was handed a piece of paper, wasn't it?
That's correct.
Yes, yes.
But to me, Jeff Duke is one of the nicest and most loved gentlemen on the racing circuit, even today, though he doesn't ride. He was a perfect gentleman. He was a great rider, and he was a credit to the Isle of Man. And I think, as a gentleman, he was always very well-mannered. He invented the one-piece leather suit. And he would stop out of his way to sign the kiddies' autographs. Now, I can mention some top riders that wouldn't do that. And the year that Phil Reed came back, and I've not mentioned his name about autographs, but when Phil Reed came back, he was going to tear this road up like. But there was a gentleman called Michael Haywood, who was the finest rider that ever went on the TT course. And fortunately enough, Phil was going to beat Michael till Mike got on that bike and showed it in his backside. He beat him. Wonderful riding. And it was such a sad affair in the island when it came through that he'd been killed in Birmingham, taking his kiddies for the fish and chips. And I went to the funeral service at Kirkbraddon in memory of Mike Haywood that was organised by the Honda team. And it was wonderful. My friend and I sat on the front row. So I only a fluke, but it was a wonderful affair. He was a great man. I can remember him coming into the Villa Marina at the night time to receive his trophy. And if he failed to do something that day, his father, Kings of Oxford, he used to hit him with his walking stick. You should have done better. But he was a gentleman. Mike Haywood was so well thought of. It was a tragedy.
Mm. I've heard it said that Mike Hayward would stop and talk to anyone
who
was interested in...
Anything to do with bikes. He'd come in, I would see that there was somebody on the gate at the Villa Marina, otherwise we'd have been swamped at the presentation night with cars and bikes. And the instructions to the gatekeeper was to only let the first three riders in that came, if they had cars. And Mike always came with his father in his big car. And I've seen him come in, and the kids would be in abundance there, and Mike would stop, leave the gates there. He'd tell him, I can't go yet, I've got to sign. He'd get out of the car, and he'd go and talk to anybody, and they all worshipped him. And he'd sign all the autographs that he could, till eventually we had to pull him away from him. He was wanted on the stage, the governor wanted him, or something like that. Is wonderful. And I will praise not just bikers and TD, I will praise the chief constable, the last chief, this chief constable we've got now, in his interest in the bikes. And the first time he ever came to the island, he came into the villa and I met him, and when I knew he was the new chief constable, I said, do you mind if I have a word with you? The last chief constable we had, he used to go around the entire course and meet as many miles as he could at their vantage spots. And it's surprising what that did as regards lifting the marshals. We've been stuck there like it had been pouring down with rain and we can't move. But when he come round, he knew he was doing something and he took interest in it. So when I told him this at the Villa Marina, going into his first meeting, he forgot about it. And he didn't do it on his first year. And I spoke to him later in between TT and Grand Prix. I said, you let me down, sir, didn't you? You didn't go and see those marshals. Oh, my God, Harry, he said, I'm awfully sorry. He said, but I'll see you in future that I will rectify. And he did. He's never missed a meeting that I know of. And he will come down, not in uniform, he'll sit alongside of you. Mm. And he'll be watching the different riding techniques. And he will come, have you had any trouble? No, very seldom we have trouble here. Because we've been doing it so long. All the boys, Jimmy the flag marshal, brilliant man, Jimmy. Every Andy that's took over now, a young gentleman, very good. And you can rest assured, they have no need to worry about the marshals at the bottom of Brail. They're such a good team. And it is an utter regret through my age, I can't do it anymore. And that's my life as regards marshalling. I'll regret it. I shall go in September. But unfortunately, I won't be part of it. And you feel a little bit out of it. But the boys always welcome me there. And come on. And it's a great thing. TT's the Isle of Man.
Just going back to Mike Hayward, do you remember the 67 race, which is people say is the greatest race of all time when he beat Agostini?
Yeah.
You remember, can you tell me anything about that?
Well, he was lagging behind a little bit and somebody gave him the tic-tac and he just pumped it up and he beat him. And he came and he was so hilarious. His father went stark raving bonkers. He was, oh, fabulous. And he not only was a great win, but let us not take anything away from Agostini. Agostini was a brilliant rider and a thorough gentleman, and that's why it was Chris Nagel's leap. But in that race it was electric. You could feel it in the air, everything, all the mass of the team, and we always have a sweep at the bottom of Brail, and Jimmy got Agos, and everybody, oh, you're on a winner today. But he wasn't. It was Mike Hayward that was the winner. And he was electric. But as regards racing, it was a fantastic race. What we miss now in the racing is we've lost the 125s and 250s. And a lot of the racing today is the superbikes. And there's none the thrill when they first put the fairings on. Ray Ammon is one. And We looked at the 50s. They used to ride 50 cc's, brilliant. All them days have gone, and it's just a case of now of it's a one machine, it's near enough the same as the other now. The speeds have gone from astronomical. I mean, this year where he's done the 130, it's absolutely marvellous. But how long can we go on like that? Mm. In not only racing, but in safety's sake. You know, it was very sad to hear the news about the fatality at the 28th, was it? Where the boy went into the crowd. We don't like hearing news like that. Nobody does. Except lunatics that take a drink and they come down wanting to be macabre. Mm. Marshals don't act like that. But I've enjoyed, like I've said over and over again, I've enjoyed every minute of it. I'm very proud. A little funny thing, I hope you heard it, or I didn't realise it. But this year, with it being the 100th year, at the start of the race, when the governor was going to go, we had the lady singing our national anthem, O Land of Our Birth. And then she sang Ellen Vanin. And I'm in the house after the race, and I heard this lady come on Manning line and say, could somebody tell her why they sang O Land of Our Birth and Ellen Vanin? It was so down and so dismal. And I went on. I said, but that kind lady who objected to our Manx national anthem being sung, just take stock and ask herself, why am I in the Isle of Man? Because I stood there in front of the Italians, the Germans, the French, and I stood to attention. I thought it was marvellous. I was very proud. It was there, our own national anthem. And everybody was asking me, why do you stand to attention? Because it's my national anthem. Manx, and you're proud of it. So why should we be condemned for playing our own national anthem? And I went on Manning line at that, and I got so many calls. People were ringing me up, were very pleased that you did that in support of the Manx national anthem. I said, no, I have nothing to phone me about. It's what we should do. Absolutely. We shouldn't have to wait for people to criticize. Do it. And if you're in a theatre and they play it, stand up and be
counted. Yes. Yeah. Okay, well, that's really great. Thank you very much indeed.
I hope I've helped you in a little way.
Absolutely.
And all I can say to you, thank you very much for coming, and I hope you'll get all that memorabilia. Now, if you want to have a look at it,